Well, we look at our pollution for the last time, at least for a while, and look at evolution's influence on politics. This was actually the one that brought me to this subject, realizing this. Now, I've put together so many quotes of people that I know, but a lot of people that I don't. So I've multiplied the quotes because I'm not a politician, I'm not a politics guy, and take you through my expertise of political strategy wouldn't take much time. But this begins with The Origin of Species, the book, and a copy of one of the beginning ones, published November 24th, 1859. So that's when the splash occurred. Darwin's subtitle was The Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. Now, it doesn't take too much imagination to realize that those who were pushing for a socialist regime, the struggle of the masses, would take this up. F.H. Little, in his book, The Macmillan Atlas History of Christianity, says he, speaking of Darwin, proposed that natural selection governs the evolution of forms of life. Let me just say, we haven't been looking at why evolution is wrong in this series, just the effects that it's had. But natural selection doesn't improve things. Natural selection doesn't add to the genetic ability. In fact, survival of the fittest only means they're called fittest because they survived. The question was asked, if you have a healthy rabbit or you have a sickly rabbit, which one will survive? The answer actually is which one stays closest to the hole. Maybe the sick rabbit stayed pretty close, and as soon as somebody showed up, he dived down. And the healthy rabbit was running across the field when he got scooped up by the eagle or pounced on by the animal. So the fittest was the smartest, staying closest to home, I guess. But it doesn't say anything about their genetic structure, you see. So, but that was what he said, right there, actually, in the title, the main title. He proposed that natural selection governs the evolution of all forms of life, with the fittest surviving. The latter proposition became the basis of several schools of politics and social philosophy, including both laissez-faire economics and Nazism. The former displaced the view of man as a fallen angel and replaced it with man conceived as risen animal. And I didn't have room to put that part on there. Adam Sedgwick, he's the author of the famous student's textbook of zoology. He was alive at the time that Darwin published Origin of Species. And he wrote to Darwin saying, "I have read your book with more pain than pleasure. Parts of it I admired greatly. Parts of it I laughed till my sides were almost sore. Other parts I read with absolute sorrow because I think them utterly false and grievously mischievous." It's that mischievousness that we're looking at tonight. A man with an interesting initials, R.E.D. Clark, wrote Darwin Before and After. He said, "Our own generation has lived to see the inevitable result of evolutionary teaching, the result that Sedgwick, that we just quoted, foresaw as soon as he had read The Origin. Mussolini's attitude was completely dominated by evolution. In public utterances, he repeatedly used the Darwinian catchwords while he mocked at perpetual peace, lest it hinder the evolutionary process. In Germany, it was the same. Adolf Hitler's mind was captivated by evolutionary teaching, probably since the time he was a boy. Evolutionary ideas, quite undisguised, lie at the basis of all that is worst in Mein Kampf and in his public speeches. Sir Fred Hoyle, in his book, The Intelligent Universe, and Hoyle is a modern-day renowned British astrophysicist, a very top scholar. He says, I am haunted by a conviction that the nihilistic philosophy, nihilism means nothing means anything. Everything boils down to nothing. Nihilistic philosophy, which so-called educated opinion chose to adopt following the publication of The Origin of Species, committed mankind to a course of automatic self-destruction. He says, I'm haunted by this thought. A doomsday was then set ticking. Theodosius Zabkonski wrote the article Evolution at Work in the magazine Science. In turn, biological evolutionism exerted ever-widening influences on the natural and social sciences, and its repercussions were neither sound nor commendable. Suffice it to mention the so-called social Darwinism, which often sought to justify the inhumanity of man to man, and the biological racism, which furnished a fraudulent scientific sanction for the atrocities committed in Hitler's Germany and elsewhere. Let me pause here to say that very often Christianity has been blamed for thousands of people dying, pointing out the counter-revolutions or counter-reformations and the purges and all these things. Well, we understand there is corporate Christianity and then there's New Testament Christianity. New Testament Christianity has not killed anybody. However, take all of it together, and the amount of people killed in religious wars is only a mere fraction of who was killed by Hitler and the communist regimes, including, what's his name, Pol Pot? Of Vietnam. Millions have died at the hands of this, and all of them have as their religious base evolution. Henry Morris, in his History of Modern Christianity, says, Darwin's books were quickly translated into all the Earth's main languages, and the political leaders of the various nations began using the Darwinian catchwords to justify their expansionist ambitions. The influence in Germany was especially profound. There, the atheistic biologist Ernst Haeckel embarked on a popularization campaign fully comparable to that of Huxley in England. The philosopher Nietzsche, with his doctrine of the Superman, the Übermensch, was also greatly influenced by Darwin, though he thought Darwin did not go far enough in promoting the militaristic and racial implications of his theories. Darwinistic imperialism had a great impact on the policies of Bismarck, and even more so on those of Adolf Hitler. I introduce you to Ernst Haeckel, a younger and older picture. Ernst Heinrich Philipp August Haeckel, German, February 16, 1834, to August 9, 1919, a German biologist, naturalist, philosopher, physician, professor, marine biologist, and artist who discovered, described, and named thousands of new species, mapped a genealogical tree relating all life forms, and coined many terms in biology, including anthropogeny, ecology, phylum, phylogeny, stem cell, and protista. Haeckel promoted and popularized Charles Darwin's work in Germany and developed the influential but no longer widely held recapitulation theory. I don't think I kept that in there. The point of that is that in the womb, the baby goes through all the stages of evolution. It's been completely disproven because it's like only the most simplistic of people would even grant it, though you'll still find it in the books, but he was the one that came up with that idea. All right. E.A. Oppitz, his article, The Use of Reason in Religion, in the magazine Imprimis, says, Darwin, Marx, and Freud helped shape the modern mind into conformity with the worldview of mechanistic materialism, that we are only matter, and we are, as living beings, we're only accidental machines, mechanistic materialism. Michael Pittman, writing his book Adam and Evolution, said, Ernst Haeckel was an avid self-appointed spokesman for Darwinism in Germany. Haeckel professed a mystical belief in the forces of nature and a literal transfer of the laws of biology to the social realm. The movement he founded in Germany was proto-Nazi. It was Nazi in a small form. In character, romantic Volkism, and the Monist League. Monist is all is one, and that is one natural, all mechanistic. It was established in 1906. Along with evolution and science, laid the ideological foundations of German National Socialism. In German, you would pronounce National Socialism as Nationalsozialist. Nazi, that's where we get Nazi. English Darwinism interlinked two main themes, natural selection and the struggle for existence. Social Darwinism is an attempt to explain human society in terms of evolution, but Haeckel's proto-Nazi interpretation was quite different from that of capitalist Herbert Spencer or of communist Marx. For him, a major component, for Haeckel, major component was the ethic of inherent struggle between higher and lower cultures, between races of men. Once men have just evolved, then there can be higher forms and lower forms. If we were created, then we are all of one race, the human race. So even the concept of the various races is an evolutionary product. All right, Daniel Gassman, Scientific Origins of National Socialism, Social Darwinism in Ernst Haeckel and the German Monist League. Along with his social Darwinist followers, Haeckel set about to demonstrate the aristocratic and non-democratic aspect of the laws of nature. Democracy was laughed at by these people. Up to his death in 1919, Haeckel contributed to that special variety of German thought, which served as the seedbed for National Socialism. He became one of Germany's main ideologists for racism, nationalism, and imperialism. If, as he held, the German people were the master race, the superior evolutionary product, then it's their duty as the superior form to wipe out the lesser forms. That is evolution. R. Milner, Encyclopedia of Evolution. German Darwinism was shaped by Ernst Haeckel, who combined it with anti-clericalism, that means anti-priest, militaristic patriotism, and visions of German racial purity. He encouraged the destruction of the established church in Germany with its sermons about the meek shall inherit the earth and compassion for unfortunates. Such a superstitious doctrine would lead to racial suicide. The fittest aren't surviving, you see. Again, in Evolution, Encyclopedia of Evolution, he says, he, Haeckel, convinced masses of his countrymen that they must accept their evolutionary destiny as a master race and outcompete inferior peoples, since it was right and natural that only the fittest should survive. His version of Darwinism was incorporated in Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, written in 1925, which means my struggle. Taken from Haeckel's translation of Darwin's phrase, the struggle for existence. This is the true source concept of Adolf Hitler's work. Yes, ma'am.
So it wasn't just that the fittest survived, it's also the fittest killed off the others.
Yes, that was the general idea. They didn't understand my rabbit illustration. So what they were saying is the stronger defeats the weaker, and then the strong survives, and only the strong are left to mate. And so the stronger breed comes from the stronger people. But if the strong breeds with the weak, then you have weakened the race. Now, that's their concept. Ian Taylor, in The Minds of Men, said in 1918, Darwin apostle Ernst Haeckel became a member of the Thule Gesellschaft, a secret, he calls it radically right organization, though socialism is basically mostly left-wing, that played a key role in the establishment of the Nazi movement. Rudolf Hess and Hitler attended the meeting as guests. And Phelps wrote that in 1963, that they were attending there. Well, here is Karl Marx, May 5th, 1818, March 14th, 1883. As an adult, Marx became stateless. He was born in Prussia. If Jeb was here, he could tell me what Prussia was, but something like Russia, Germany, some form like that. Anyway, he was living in England most of the time, and he became stateless, spent much of his life in London, England, where he continued to develop his thought in collaboration with German thinker Friedrich Engels and published various works, the most well-known being the 1848 pamphlet, The Communist Manifesto, Karl Marx. Darwin's mechanistic approach found an immediate response in Karl Marx. He was a German Jewish philosopher in exile whose self-appointed task in London was to rewrite history in the communist terms. Marx had already designed a political and economic system for an atheist world before Darwin's major work made its mark. He was not slow to recognize that Darwinism contained much that was pertinent to his own philosophy. Z.C. Zirkel, in his book Evolution, Marxian Biology, and the Social Scene, said Friedrich Engels, one of the founders of communism, wrote to Karl Marx December 12, 1859. So it was published in November, end of November, and December 12th, Engels writes to Marx, Darwin, whom I am now just reading, is splendid. Perhaps taking his advice, Zirkel continues, Karl Marx wrote to Friedrich Engels December 19th. Although it is developed in the crude English style, this is the book which contains the basis in natural history for our views. Again, Marx wrote to Engels January 16th. Darwin's book is very important and serves me as a basis in natural selection for the class struggle in history. Not only is a death blow dealt here for the first time to teleology in the natural sciences, that is finding a purpose in the sciences, but their rational meaning is emphatically explained. Friedrich Engels, the man writing on the other end of that letter exchange, German, November 28, 1820 to August 5, 1895, was a German philosopher, social scientist, journalist, and businessman. Founded Marxist theory together with Karl Marx. In 1845, he published The Condition of the Working Class in England, based on personal observations and research done in Manchester. In 1848, he co-authored The Communist Manifesto with Marx. Otto Rühle, writing his book Karl Marx, says, just as Darwin discovered the law of evolution in organic nature, so Marx discovered the law of evolution in human history. R. Milner, Encyclopedia of Evolution, the idea that evolution is a history of competitive strife fit well with Marx's ideological class struggle. Michael Pittman, Adam and Evolution, at Marx's funeral, Engels declaimed, that as Darwin had discovered the law of organic evolution in natural history, so Marx had discovered the law of evolution in human history. With its denigration, its putting down of non-material aspects of human life, and its mission to uproot tradition and destroy creationist concepts in men's minds, communism remains one of Darwin's strongest adherents. Communism does. After 1949, when the communists took control of China, the first new text introduced to all schools was neither Marxist nor Leninist, but Darwinian. Henry Morris' long war against God. Marxism, socialism, and communism, no less than Nazism, are squarely based on evolution. Relatively speaking, there is more emphasis on the effect of environment and culture than on genetics and heredity. And the competing evolutionary units are social classes, at least in human and cultural evolution, rather than individuals. It's not the individuals who are struggling, it's the human classes that are struggling. Jay Barzin, in his book, Darwin, Marx, and Wagner, like Darwin, Marx thought he had discovered the law of development. He saw history in stages as the Darwinists saw geological strata and successive forms of life. But there are even finer points of comparison. In keeping with the feelings of the age, both Marx and Darwin made struggle the means of development. Again, the measure of value in Darwin is survival with reproduction, an absolute fact occurring in time, which wholly disregards the moral or ethics quality of the product. In Marx, the measure of value is expended labor, an absolute fact occurring in time, which also disregards the utility of the product, the usefulness of the product, and also of the workmen. It doesn't matter what kind of work they were doing, it's just its work. Again, Dobansky's Evolution at Work, written in Science, Marx recommended rather different methods, which he believed to be somehow deducible from Darwin's discoveries. He proposed to acknowledge his indebtedness by dedicating Das Kapital to Darwin, an honor which Darwin politely declined. Cliff Connor wrote Evolution versus Creationism in Defense of Scientific Thinking in the International Socialist Review. International Socialist Review, this is a socialist paper. Writing in 1980, he says, defending Darwin is nothing new for socialists. The socialist movement recognized Darwinism as an important element in its general world outlook right from the start. When Darwin published his Origin of Species in 1859, Karl Marx wrote a letter to Frederick Engels in which he said, this is the book that contains the basis in natural history for our view. By defending Darwinism, working people strengthen their defenses against the attacks of the reactionary outfits and prepare the way for transformation of the social order. He says, it's a good thing. Henry Morris, long war against God. Marx and Engels were doctrinaire evolutionists, and so have all communists been ever since. Since atheism is a basic tenet of Marxism in general, and Soviet communism in particular, it is obvious that evolution must be the number one tenet of communism. Lenin and Trotsky and Stalin were all atheistic evolutionists, and so are today's communist leaders. In fact, they have to be in order ever to get to be communist leaders. Jurafsky wrote Soviet Marxism and Natural Science. An historian can hardly fail to agree that Marx's claim to give scientific guidance to those who would transform society has been one of the chief reasons for his doctrine's enormous influence. Philosophically, socialism is based on what they believe to be true evolution. We come to Adolf Hitler, April 20th, 1889, April 30th, 1945. Sir Arthur Keith in Evolution and Ethics wrote, the German Führer, and he wrote this in 1947, as he was still fighting the war. The German Führer, as I have consistently maintained, is an evolutionist. He has consciously sought to make the practices of Germany conform to the theory of evolution. So he was recognizing it, and he saw what the effects were going to be. Bolton David Heiser, in Scientific Studies in Special Creation, referring to R.E.D. Clarke's Darwin Before and After, says this, likewise, Adolf Hitler in Germany based his fascism on evolutionary theory. This is evident from his speeches and from his book Mein Kampf. R.E.D. Clarke has pointed out that in the larger number of books which have appeared describing every phase of Hitler's regime, there's hardly a mention of the evolution of Charles Darwin. He interprets this to mean that the authors refrain from mentioning evolution in this context because they fear they might be considered to be anti-evolutionary. Oh, we don't want to be that, do we? But it's cause and effect. Here's Joseph Vissarionovich Stalin. There's a joke in that name, but we'll leave that alone. December 18, 1875, March 5, 1953, was a Georgian-born Soviet revolutionary. Georgia, a state right at Russia, now part of Russia. Political leader. He governed the Soviet Union as its dictator from the mid-1920s until his death in 1953. Little Jackie Weigel is 6 years old. 1953. Serving as General Secretary of the Central Committee of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union from 22 to 52, and as Premier of the Soviet Union from 1941 to 1953. Ideologically a Marxist and a Leninist, he helped to formalize these ideas as Marxism-Leninism, while his own policies became known as Stalinism. E. Yaroslavsky wrote Landmarks in the Life of Stalin. It was written and published in Moscow by a close associate of Stalin while Stalin was still alive. This man is not being critical when he's writing this. At a very early age, while still a pupil in the ecclesiastical school, a lot of Russians were very religious and still are, Comrade Stalin developed a critical mind and revolutionary sentiments. He began to read Darwin and became an atheist. Henry Morris, Long War Against God. Of all the forerunners of Hitler in Germany, Hegel, Kant, Nietzsche, Bernhardt, and others, the most significant was certainly Ernst Haeckel, the atheistic founder of the Monist League, most vigorous promoter of both biological Darwinism and social Darwinism in continental Europe in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Jacques Barzun, Darwin, Marx, and Wagner. War became the symbol, the image, the inducement, the reason, and the language of all human doings on the planet. No one who has not waded through some sizable part of the literature of the period, 1870 to 1914, has any conception of the extent to which it is one long call for blood, nor of the variety of parties, classes, nations, and races whose blood was separately and contradictorily clamored for by the enlightened citizens of the ancient civilization of Europe. The militarists of the second half of the century poeticized war and luxuriated in the prospect of it. With relative impunity for themselves, they took it for granted that all struggles in life must be struggles for life, and the death of the loser its natural goal. It's the loss of the less fit. In every European country between 1870 and 1914, there was a war party demanding armaments, an individualist party demanding ruthless competition, an imperialist party demanding a free hand over backward peoples, a socialist party demanding the conquest of power, and a racialist party demanding internal purges against aliens. All of them, when appeals to greed and glory failed, or even before, invoked Spencer and Darwin, which was to say, science incarnate. Race was biological, it was sociological, it was Darwinian. Henry Morris, Long War Against God, quoting from Bernhardi's book, the book that he's quoting is Germany and the Next War. This is written after World War I, Germany and the Next War. Darwin, Nietzsche, and Haeckel laid the foundations for the intense German militarism that eventually led to the Great War of 1914 to 1918. The Great War, that's First World War, before they knew there was a Second World War, called the Great War. There were others who participated in the development, of course, including many of the German generals and political leaders, all very much under the spell of the German variety of social Darwinism. General Frederick von Bernhardi said, "War gives biologically just decisions. War works out just fine, since its decisions rest on the very nature of things. It is not only a biological law, but war is a moral obligation, and as such, an indispensable factor in civilization." Here's Frederick Adolf Julius von Bernhardi, November 22, 1849 to December 11, 1930. Prussian general, military historian. He was a best-selling author prior to World War I, a militarist. He is perhaps best known for his bellicose book, bellicose, warlike, war-mongering book, Deutschland und der nächste Krieg, Germany and the Next War, printed in 1911. He advocated a policy of ruthless aggression and complete disregard of treaties and regarded war as divine business. But you understand that his divinity was evolution. And then we've mentioned Friedrich Wilhelm Nietzsche, German, October 15, 1844, August 25, 1900, German philosopher, cultural critic, poet, philologist, and Latin and Greek scholar whose work has exerted a profound influence on Western philosophy and modern intellectual history. T. Walbank and A.M. Taylor wrote Civilization Past and Present. It's one of the standard works on history of civilization. Wrote in 1981, volume 2, he, Nietzsche, ridiculed democracy and socialism for protecting the worthless and weak and hindering the strong. Social Darwinism and the anti-democratic cult of naked power, as preached by advocates like Nietzsche, were laying the foundations of fascism, which would one day plunge the world into the most terrible convulsion in its history. I leave you with a picture of Lenin and Stalin enjoying themselves in the midst of the luxury they were creating by killing millions of people. So, sorry to burden you with all these quotes, but this is, and you'll notice that you have Henry Morris, a Bible believer, you have others writing for that cause, then you have all the rest, which are not fighting for any cause, they're just relating history, and some actually on the other side, claiming what we say they believe, claiming to believe it because they're evolutionists, because they're socialists, which ends up being the same thing. Evolution's influence on politics, and we stand in that stagnant water today. Comments or questions? You recognize this is, in my opinion, again, I'm not a political person. In my opinion, the great hatred for President Trump is only enhanced by his pro-life stand, which he's already passed three, whatever presidents passed, things that have limited this, increased rights, and his pro-military work and so on, but his capitalist stand, his pro-business stand, and the socialists of the country that thought they had it all sewn up are just broken-hearted, grieving, and a capitalist is not just a different thought. He's evil. And this is what they've sold the people on, sold the media on.